The Dorkening and all affiliated shows are not intended for anyone under the age of 18. The following may contain discussions or scenes that have adult situations, graphic violence, nudity, strong sexual content, and graphic language. This show is intended for mature audiences only. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hey kids, it's time to check out the Dorkening Podcast Network. With over 30 podcasts that encompass everything from horror to video games to comic books, and so much more, you're bound to find the shows for your taste. Whether it be Nerds of Unusual Origin, That Strange Show, Retro Red Octopus, Splash Pages, Throwdown Thursday, The Horror Squad, Still Talking With, my God, man, I can't read all of these. So just feel free to play and experiment with the Dorkening Podcast Network. There are over 30 shows chock full of nerdy goodness to sink your ears into. And they're all available on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, and wherever fine podcasts are broadcast.
All right, it's 1979, and we see that Bruce Wayne Jr. and Kara Kent are, they have an announcement in the paper. They are going to be married. Meanwhile, we see that Clark and Lois are old. Okay, I'm going to need you to follow me here, Leo. And, you know, Lois is in a hospital bed. She's very old, very short hair. She's clearly sick. And, you know, they're in their twilight years, which makes sense. The name of the issue is Twilight of the Gods. Mm-hmm. And we have Dr. Hollert is Lois's doctor here, a bearded fellow. And he's taking care of her. Clark, you know, he's wearing his nice three-piece suit, nice white haired glasses, all that stuff. He goes up to the roof and he gets into a Superman duds under his clothes and flies fast enough so the makeup burns off. And he's just as youthful looking as he's always been, because his aging is incredibly slow due to his Kryptonian physiology. And he obviously wants to maintain that he is, you know, a normal human man. And, you know, he's making his way into the Daily Planet, puts makeup back on, and boom, you know, he looks like old Clark again. He is wearing the same clothes when he comes out of the stock room. One thing that I'm surprised that John Byrne didn't cover at all in this point is, and this is a very Silver Age thing, but the yellow S on Superman's cape. This is not in the story here. This is just a fun little Silver Age Superman tidbit. This is why I always felt it was important to have the yellow S on the cape for Superman in like live action design, stuff like that. That's a compartment.
Oh,
that is where that's where Clark puts his clothes when he changes into his Superman action suit.
Oh, wow.
Puts his clothes inside the cape. Yeah. So that one's for free, kids.
Is it cool. Bigger on the inside than it is on the outside?
Yeah, it's like the TARDIS.
It's a little Phantom Zone, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, that's also why it's a little important to have, you know, you can't really, it's hard to do that with the post-crisis Superman. Yeah. Because his action suit is Earth-made. It's you know, it doesn't rip or tear so easily because of its proximity to his skin due to the bioelectric aura that his body produces from the solar radiation he absorbs. However, the original gold and silver age origins of Superman's action suit is that it was made from the Kryptonian blankets that he was rocketed to Krypton with. And therefore, the threads are just as indestructible as him or any other objects from Krypton. So when he goes into burning buildings or he's shot at with bullets, the material won't get damaged because it's Kryptonian.
But he made that, right? Like his mom didn't make it?
In the Golden Age?
Yeah, like how did he cut it, you know?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Maybe they didn't explain it. Okay. I mean, yeah, that's fair. It's like we just have to take it as rote, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's that. Like she crocheted it. It's I don't know.
That's fair. No.
Very breathable suit. But yeah, so but that's one thing. Like I see he's wearing the same clothes, but like where did he put the clothes? In because of the fact that this is all coming from Golden and Silver Age.
Yeah.
He would have folded those clothes, put them in his cape, flown, and then taken them out of the cape to put them back on. So
and, that's cool. I'm glad you had that sort of insight because I wouldn't have even known, you know.
Well, you know, it's just like little things you latch onto. You sometimes need them to make like sense over the years. Here we see Kara as Supergirl working with Bruce Jr. as Batman. Looking very Neil Adams Batman. I mean the colors for sure, but also the design of the ears on the cowl. I love the S insignia on Kara as Supergirl. I really like how the inside tail of the top of the S and the bottom of the S line up in a diagonal. See what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I really like that. I thought that was very cool. It's like such a small flourish, but it makes a lot of sense. And I do get a kick out of the Superman insignia earrings that Kara wears. It's like the branding is palpable. Still hate the fact that she's just like wearing a mini skirt with bare legs, like. Whatever just have that be blue pants, like blue leggings, you know, like what the fuck. But regardless, it's other than that, it's a sharp looking costume. I like the boots too.
Yeah, the boots are cool, and heeled boots make sense for someone who can fly, you know. So it's like, yeah, okay, she's not gonna
it's
have
a
to
small
run
heel too. It's like a it's yeah. like a kitten heel. Yeah, well, she doesn't need to worry about her ankle fucking rolling.
And I love when he does that pirate boot. Like that, like that's like the Cyclops boot, or
yeah,
you know, it's pretty cool looking. He does a great job with the costuming on this.
The Buccaneer boot is
Buccaneer,
yeah. Yep. And we see that Bats and Supergirl are going up against Brainiac here, and we get two iterations. We have like your original Silver Age green skin, three dot across the forehead Brainiac, and then also like the 80s. Very robotic, metallic looking Brainiac. So he's really showing like, oh, this is basically like his Megazord, like the big metal one. Like, you know, he's going to use that to be his like destroyer.
And subtly tearing his face off.
Yeah, subtly. And they stop Brainiac, and the Brainiac ship gets sucked into a black hole. It had caused itself, and everyone on Earth can kind of see it going down. And we come back to the Daily Planet and see that Jimmy and Clark are talking. Jimmy is an older guy still wearing those loud as fuck checkered sports coats, and he's talking with Clark. You can go to the next page, Leo. And he basically says like, hey man, I don't know if you noticed this, Clark, but I am also really old, and I would like to not have to work as much anymore. So this is me retiring. And Clark's like, oh man, that sucks, but I get it. And you know, it was kind of cool because Jimmy's like, but you know, if it's all right with you, I'd still I still like to write something for you guys occasionally. And Clark, of course, is like, yeah, Jim, of course. Like, you've been here for like 55 years. You want to drop an op-ed, we will fucking print it, you know, which it's really cool to see. Like, we didn't get much of Perry White in this story at all, mm-hmm. which does make sense to a degree because he was older than them and he wouldn't have been a contemporary, you know? But they, at least John Byrne takes the time to really like show Jimmy was a great friend to them and, you know, a colleague for a very long time. And they even refer, like speaking with the kids and stuff to him as like Uncle Jimmy and stuff, several points in the story. So I really like that. Interesting. Not very often that you see that Jimmy Olsen, goes bald. Later in life, like he ends up suffering from male pattern baldness. That's not a common thing in any like, you know, pushing forward into the future kind of story.
Yeah.
I like it. And it's funny because it's one of the few instances for John Byrne, especially that Jimmy Olsen, it has a very distinctive look from every other male character in this entire story.
Mm-hmm.
I can take a look at Jimmy Olsen's face here, not the checkered coat, but Jimmy Olsen's face. And I know what character that is because he doesn't have that square jaw with the pointy chin and the Christopher Reeve-esque nose and all that jazz. I mean, that profile of old Clark right there as Jimmy's walking out of that office. Tell me that doesn't look like Christopher Reeve in old man makeup.
Oh, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know? And this is like one of my absolute favorite parts of this entire story, which funny enough, it's a Batman thing. Ra's al Ghul shows up. Batman, we see Bruce Sr. He makes it to the top of a mountain somewhere in what, the Himalayas or something.
I
like
imagine.
That.
Yeah. Yep.
And, he passes out and he's brought inside. He's brought to, and he's tied to a chair, and he's old and grizzled. He, honest to God, he looks like,
Bruce
dude
Willis?
From dude from Avatar and Don't Breathe.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Yep.
Like he looks just like him. It's insane.
Aang?
What?
Aang?
Scott Aang or something. What's it? Oh, wrong Aang. Okay.
No,
Avatar.
Steve Lang.
What the hell? I
was remember. Making a bad joke. I'm sorry.
You were close though. I think his last name is Lang.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is Lang. Maybe it is Steven.
Can't be him though. He doesn't have the blue arrow on his head.
Steven Lang. Yeah, Steven Lang is his name. Yeah, this iteration that John Byrne drew here. He looks just like Stephen Lang, which, I mean, this is before Stephen Lang was more of a known entity.
Yeah.
Because of those movies we mentioned. But yeah, we have very classic looking Ra's al Ghul here, mm-hmm. with Talia in tow. And we see Ra's saying like, hey, you know, I've been paying attention to you for a while, adversary. He keeps calling him adversary, you know, mm-hmm. not detective, which I dig, because they never met before this point. You know, this is not a middle-aged Batman meeting Ra's al Ghul and realizing like this is the head of the demon and all that. This is first meeting, and Ra's al Ghul laying it all out. He's like, you know, I've been around for a long time. I've watched your entire career with great interest. You are clearly someone who's very talented, very driven, very intelligent. You come from resources, but you know how to multiply them and utilize them to your best ability. I have a proposition for you. Behold the Lazarus Pit. And it's like, what? Like when I first read this, I was like, what on earth is he getting at? And, We see that, you know, BJ, Bruce Jr. and Kara, they're, you know, they're doing their thing. It's so funny to see Kara like take her wig off there with the short hair, I almost want to say like it looks better, but at the same time, like, that's probably because I'm so used to seeing a blonde Supergirl.
Yeah.
You know, and also with the short hair, it is kind of funny. She looks more like Karen Starr, Power Girl, than Kara. But yeah, we see that the two of them are like madly in love. And I love that S. I really do. I hope we see something like that to differentiate like the Supergirl S from the Superman S in the DCU live action stuff that's coming up, considering they just announced that Millie Alcock is going to be playing Kara/Supergirl in the DCU.
Interesting. That's kind of the design they went with for Injustice 2, with having kind of it flare out the side of the S. So
yeah, I can dig it.
So yeah.
Yeah. I think the one I saw from Injustice, it reminded me of what, like the Tim Burton Superman? Like some of the initial designs for that S.
Hmm.
Yeah. But moving from there, we see an individual talking to a small Asian woman. Her name is Melai, and she's referring to him as husband. And he's wearing this purple and green armor with sort of an upside down hexagonal symbol that has sort of an ornate slashy S symbol in it. And this armored individual makes mention that, you know, she saved his life and he's learned to be tranquil. And he's known peace with her for the past 10 years, but he has to go forward with, you know, what his plan is, and that whatever happens, to let their son know how much he loves him. And don't let him grow up knowing the pain that I've known my entire life. And from there, we go to the wedding of Kara and BJ, which, my God, so late 70s, early 80s. Look at the wide lapels and ruffled white shirts for those powder blue tuxedos.
Yeah.
I am so happy I was born past that point, in all honesty.
And her wedding dress is kind of like a nun's habit.
Yeah, a little bit. It's very, very high necked too. Like, that comes right up.
Ooh, maybe she's the flying nun.
She is.
Well, I mean, certainly the flying part.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know.
By the way, that was a very old reference for our
list.
Yeah, it was a show starring Sally Field. But you know, right after the wedding. Right after they're married, Lois, of course, and Clark are there. Lois is in her wheelchair. She's wearing a wig, a short haired wig under a hat, to cover up the fact that she's lost her hair, likely from like chemotherapy and stuff. I do think it's kind of cool that even, you know, later on in this far into the series, we still have Lois wearing purple. It's a very light, muted purple, but that is a character symbol for Lois Lane, purple through and through. Even her blanket covering her legs is like a bit more of a burgundy color. And then all of a sudden, we see that her doctor has also been invited, Dr. Ho. Can't remember what the fuck his name was.
Hodor.
Yeah. Hodor.
Mr. Mix Hodor.
And the Hodor. All of a sudden the green and purple armored individual shows up and zaps Clark. And he's like, blast of intense kryptonite radiation, can barely breathe. This isn't water, it's alcohol. And the armored individual is like, don't worry, Superman. I want you incapacitated, but I don't want you dead. And Kara's saying, the suit blocks my X-ray vision, but the technology has Luther written all over it. which would be funny if it actually did say Luther all over it. But regardless, Kara at super speed changes into her Supergirl persona with the long haired dark wig and all. And she goes up against the armored person, and they shoot some kind of blast, like almost look like sonar or something that knocks her off balance in a way. And in the interim, we see that a bunch of people are scrambling to go help Clark and Lois, and it turns out they are in some kind of bubble force field that it's impenetrable. They can't get through. And the doctor is in there as well. Dr. Hollert. And as it turns out, Dr. Hollert was using an image transducer, and it's actually Lex Luthor. And if you could see, this is a classic trope from the Silver Age. I'm sure you guys picked up on it. But Hollert is an anagram of Luther.
Luther, yep.
Yeah, H-O-L-U-R-T. They did stuff like that all the time. Like in the Silver Age, like Lex Luthor had a sister that I can't remember if it was like she didn't know about him, or she was adopted and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But her name was Lena Thorul, T-H-O-R-U-L, you know. But they're in this force field here, Luther, old Lois, and old makeup Superman, old makeup Clark Kent. And Superman is weakened from that blast he got from the armored fellow, and he basically powerless. Luther just basically bats him aside, grabs Lois by the neck, knocks her wig off, and snaps her fucking neck right in front of Superman. Just deed. And that's the end of Lois Lane in this story. And Luther straight up says to him, like,
yeah, the last
save your breath, Superman. Today is not your day to die. I want you alive to see your whole family perish. And now that your wife is dead, go to the next page. It is time for your daughter to join her. And that's where we see that Supergirl is going up against this armored fellow. And here's where it is. Here's the reference to Superman the movie. The armored fellow is thinking to himself, there she is, as I expected. The impact has not diminished her arrogance. And she says, why don't you just surrender, Luther? Because she's still convinced this is him. You know your technology can never be a match for my powers. I'll mold that suit into the bars of your cell. It's the same thing that Christopher Reeve Superman says about the chest that he's hiding the kryptonite in Superman the movie. I'll mold this into the bars of your prison cell, you diseased maniac. And that's when the armored individual like bursts out of the armor and they say, you might just do that, Kara, if the power was in the suit. And we see that it's Joel Kent, her brother, Clark and Lois's son. And even out of the armor, he's wearing like the classic Luther supervillain getup, the tight green pants with purple boots and purple collared shirt with the X going across it and the green gloves. This is very Legion of Doom Lex Luthor outfit. Yep. And that's when Joel explains that, you know, she's like, I thought you were dead. And he's like, yeah, well, my men tried to kill me. They shot me in the back and took my dog tags so I couldn't be identified. And that's when I was found by this beautiful angel who took me in, nursed me to health, and gave me back my life. And then, you know, we fell in love, and, I was able to get in touch with the only man who had been a true father to me. And she came back home with us to become my wife. Yes, you have a sister-in-law, Kara, a little something to warm your heart before I tear it out. And she's just like, Luther, you think of Luther as your father? He's a monster. And you can see Joel has just drank the Kool-Aid. He's like, no, he's a great man and the only one who's ever been honest with me. And he starts using superpowers, and he's just kicking the crap out of Kara, just mollywopping her. And all the while just saying, like, you know, it was Superman. He's been convinced that Superman didn't want him to have the same powers because he was jealous and he wanted to have all of it for himself. And, you know, Kara's trying to explain, no, Luther's the one that did that, you idiot. And he's like, no, why would he lie to me? He's my friend. Like, fucking moron. And that he only allowed Kara to have her powers because he knew a girl could never actually be his equal. Like, because that's clearly how Superman rolls, right? He's married to Lois Lane of all people and would think that about women.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. There's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door!
Oh, they're so disgusting.
Are you a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic books? Then Epic Tales from the Sewers is a podcast for you. We cover the comic books, video games, movies, cartoons, and anything else turtle related. We talk about the toys, we talk about the cereal, we talk about all the fun things about turtles that we love so much. So give a listen. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and more. Check out Epic Tales from the Sewers, part of the Epic Airways Podcast Network. Give a listen, dudes. Cowabunga is this podcast for you.
I love the whole flimsy premise of this. It involves like this little 13-year-old kid who is like trying to fix his bike, and then a creepy stranger in a white tuxedo shows up to tell him all of this stuff, and then turns him into the most diseased member of the family, who thinks that, you know, all this indoctrinated bullshit and stuff like that. I'm like,
the thing is, like, there's a lot of heavy lifting being done by the Veil of Time. We don't know how much contact and how often Luther was doing that. Like,
sure,
I don't think it was just the one time.
Well, he clearly knew where he was in, I was going to say Da Nang, but I think it was in Laos, right? Like, yeah. He clearly knew where he was. So, I mean, he showed up right after he was shot and all that. So I don't know how much time had passed there. So
he probably made sure to target him when he was at his most vulnerable at different points too, you know?
I just like some of this stuff is like, yes, this is very Silver Age and all that. But now it's like Joel has no regard that, you know, even though he was lied to, he puts a premium on that over like Luthor snapping his mother's neck, which is the plan.
He doesn't know that Luthor snapped his mother's neck, though.
No, but he knows that he plans to hurt his family.
Yeah, well, he doesn't care. But once again, like, I'm not trying to make excuses for it. But like,
I just think he's a turd. I don't like.
Listen, we've seen plenty of people in the real world nowadays who like have seen things for what they truly are, right in front of their own faces, and they still can't see the forest for the trees, and they live in a state of denial in their own perceived reality. So this actually, I don't think this is like too far out of left field. I get what you're saying 100%, but I don't think it's too far fetched. Let me put it that way.
You know? I'm just saying like from Inception to like this point with Joel, like Joel is like one of the worst characters, like not like, oh, he's poorly written, like, wow, this guy's a piece of trash. Yes. You know,
but he's made, he see, that's one of the things, like, I would love to see an expansion upon, like, how Luther manipulates this kid over the course of like 15 years.
Yeah, you know? I think there's definitely some meat on that bone, you know,
100%.
Yeah,
that's a chicken wing that you don't throw back in the box after one bite. 100%.
Very fair.
And but yeah, as you know, and then he says, you know, Luther finally found a way to give me the powers I deserved, the power to kill you. And we see that he goes full on, you know, Bullseye, Elektra fist through the chest. With Kara, he punches right through her chest. She's donezo. You can see his fist bulging through the other side of her, like poking at her cape. And then the next thing we see is Bruce Jr. coming down in the whirligig.
Yeah, he does.
In the whirligig, and he sees Kara dead on the ground, and I mean, just horrible. I mean, it's kind of sad, but BJ finally got the tragedy portion of being Batman. Mm-hmm. Because his father and Dick both suffered horribly to a point that made them turn to vigilantism. Whereas BJ was like born into it and it's just a thing. Whereas like he's now truly suffered horrible loss, violent, horrible loss. And it's going to, it brings him to a pretty dark place. And they just got married. I mean, of all the fucking days too. And we come to see Joel with Luther, and Joel is just like, you know, I'm not feeling great, Lex. And he's getting all like sweaty and, you know, pallid. You can see like little spots in front of him. Clearly his vision's kind of, and he's like, you know, what is this? And Luther says to him like, oh, it's nothing unexpected. The formula I concocted to give you your powers like your father's, I anticipated it would have this effect within 5 hours. What effect? Remember when you confronted your father with your knowledge that he was Superman? Remember how he told you he wished he could give you the powers that Gold K had taken away, but that he could not? That there was no formula known which could give a human such powers without killing them? A lie. The first of so many he told me. Well, no, not precisely. You see, your father has never lied to you, while I, on the other hand, have always lied. Dun, dun, dun. Very telenovela of him.
Yeah. And,
Señor Luther, how could you? Mentiroso.
Por qué?
Por qué? Por qué, Luthor? That's when Superman busts in through the wall, and he's just like, Joel? Alive? And Luther's just like, not anymore. I said you'd see your whole family die today, didn't I? And he's like, you monster! To which I love Lex's reaction. Oh, fiddle faddle, Superman. You can't imagine I would really be here in person. I'm miles away in a place you will not find so easily as this. After all, I wanted you to find this place. And as it turns out, he turns around and sees that small Asian woman who was clearly Joel's wife and a small baby. And she tells him, I am Malai Kent, Superman. Your son was my husband, and this is your grandson. And he's just like, grandson? Yes, I can see with microscopic vision. The genetic match is exact. But like Joel, he has no superpowers. And he's just like, I heard everything Luther and Joel said. He was able to turn my kid against me because of what I feared when I learned Joel would have no powers. Because of the terrible burden of growing up the powerless son of Superman. Now this baby, my grandson, and that's when BJ shows up. And he's like, we'll never have to carry that burden, Clark. You know, and that's when Batman, Bruce Jr. says, you know, we both lost everything. Perhaps we've been given something, a second chance. In this child, perhaps, we can build the true union of our families and hope for a better tomorrow. And basically, you know, he's going to marry Malai, and they're going to raise this kid as a Wayne. And then we come to 1989, Crime and Punishment. That is, let's see, we got... We see Superman with his cool black outlined symbol. And, you know, he's just, you know, we see we have no choice, Mr. President. And we see them looking at a large flat screen TV. And it looks as though Superman is on the hook for murdering Lex Luthor. And Luthor rigged it so that everyone could see the broadcast of this occurring. Superman throws a metal rod at him, and it hits a panel and electrocutes Luther. They're in the White House discussing this incident. And, you know, they keep saying like Superman's a murderer. You know, we have to worry about the fact that Superman was driven to such depths of madness and despair. And of course, fun to note before we get any further, that the president, who they have not said his name yet, just Mr. President. However, He is a man with dark hair, and he has white at the temples going all around to the back of his head. Like,
we don't like him.
He's a very classic John Byrne feathered hair, like gray haired look. And then we get to see like what their sort of backup plan for Superman, maybe having his cheese slide off his cracker might be. And they're going to like a super duper secret, like incredibly secret, like what is it, chamber, like 10 miles under the White House or some shit. And they have kryptonite radiation. What is it they're trying to get?
That's not being generated in this pit to kill even a human. So it looks like they're trying to harness kryptonite into something.
This fragment of kryptonite to use on him if he should ever go mad. He said at the time, if you can't trust the president of the United States, who can you trust? Wasn't it Nixon he gave the green K to?
I think it was.
Yes, another small irony.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's gone. And then we see Bruce Jr. In a very, very sleek looking Batwing, saying, I really hated breaking into the White House like that. But somehow I knew Hal Jordan would never willingly surrender the kryptonite to me. So that was President Hal Jordan, which makes sense. I mean, it does.
Yeah.
He's a veteran, a pilot, you know, kind of hero, you know, war hero, military hero.
We've seen President Slade Wilson in other things too. So yeah. It makes sense. It tracks. And, honestly, we see, fucking awful.
Yeah, but we see that Batman has traveled to the Arctic to this Fortress of Solitude. We see the giant yellow key, which is indicative of the way to get in. And we see him come out, and he's in his cool new 80s style duds, which very Dark Claw.
Oh yeah, like it's
very Dark Claw. But it definitely has like that cybernetic armor component to the suit, which
kind of Wolverine too.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why I say Dark Claw, because it's like the combination of the two. But yeah, like we see that he makes his way into the Fortress of Solitude, and he's trying to find out like what the hell's going on with Superman, and he got the kryptonite obviously to as a way to protect himself in case Superman, you know, comes at him. And he walks in, he sees all the different figures that Clark has created statues and mementos of, and then he comes across someone's car and he's like, oh shit, you know, like I did, oh my, my heart, my feelings. And that's when he takes his mask off and Clark's, you know, Batman, stop. And he punches him in the face. And Bruce is just like, pulling your punches, Clark, a mistake. And Superman's like double fist smacking him in the face and everything. And then Bruce is just kind of kicking the crap out of him. And then he takes a look and he sees that Superman's face is all swollen and getting bruised. He's like, wait a minute. What is this, man? You want to explain this? And that's when Superman tells him he came across Luthor. He found him after, you know, looking for a decade. And he sees Luthor sitting down in this place. And Luthor wasn't just done when it came to killing Superman's family. He also made sure to have Jimmy Olsen killed. And have his widow, Lucy, who they don't mention it here, but Lucy is Lucy Lane.
The
younger sister of Lois. Hmm. She was gunned down by bank robbers. And their kids, their son, Clark, and his wife and children were driven off a cliff road by a runaway truck. Perry White Jr., Mayor Perry White Jr. was slain by assassins, and a dozen others, of course, all close to you, all dead. And, you know, Superman's like, you know, you're an asshole. I'm going to come at you, blah, blah, blah. And he's sitting down in this like mechanized chair, and Superman grabs him by his collar and, you know, lifts him up. And he's like, "You fiend, wasn't slaughtering my family enough." And then he's like screams and goes, "This is our problem, Superman." He goes, "The hell? My arm pulling you out of that chair almost dislocated my shoulder." And Luther's like, "Yeah, I mean, I'm not as heavy as I used to be, but you know, trying to lift my entire weight with one hand out of that chair would be a strain for any mere mortal, which is exactly what you are now, dickhead. Have you noticed my cool gold colored cufflinks?" And that's when Superman's like, "Gold kryptonite." Luther just robbed Superman of his powers the moment he broke through the wall to confront him. And that's when he says, "Yeah, this is my final plot and has many layers to it." And he starts walking around, and Superman's like, "Wait, you're not crippled?" And he says, "Oh, I'm old and weak, but I'm not that infirm. I use the chair to conserve energy, and I'll never need to do that again once I've transferred my mind into your body." And that's when he's like, "You know what, Superman's like, what are you babbling about?" He says, "Oh, that. Well, this guise has served me well enough for the past 50 years, but now the moment has come for your utter defeat, and I want you to know who it really was who bested you. Look into my eyes, Superman. Look deep into my eyes." And that's when Superman's like, "Oh my God, no, it can't be. The Ultra Humanite?" As it turns out, the Ultra Humanite, way back in the very first issue of this four-part series, took his henchman, L, who was Lex Luthor, and transferred his brain into Luthor's body, because when that explosion occurred, the Ultra Humanite's body was destroyed, but Luthor went brain dead. So it was like the perfect union. He was able to, you know, make use of both. And ever since then, he's been going under the guise of Lex Luthor. And, you know, he's just been trying to figure out how to basically get at Superman this whole time. And clearly he plans on using the same procedure to transfer his brain and consciousness into Superman's body.
It's crazy.
And, yeah, that's the Ultra Humanite's bag. That's what he does. And that's when Luthor puts on this thing called the Encephalo Transfer Helmet, which, fantastic name. And I guess Cerebro was taken. And Superman's like, "I may not have powers, but I can still flip this shard of metal into my hand." And that's when we see him flick it at Luthor. And we see the electrocution thing that we saw at the beginning of this issue, beginning of this chapter. And he kills Luthor, he electrocutes him. And we see that Superman goes with Batman in front of like the UN, and he confesses, he pleads guilty. And they're like, "Well, you know, in light of the fact that you're Superman and the stuff that this guy did to you and what you've done for the world, you know, we're willing to like kind of, you know, give you the benefit of the doubt." And he's like, "Listen, I was incensed and deranged with like sadness and depression. Like, I can't be sure that wasn't cold-blooded murder. I might have killed him regardless." And they're like, "Well, we're not gonna put you in prison powerless, because you'll get killed on day one." And that's when Batman BJ is like, "Well, we actually have a solution. How about we put him in the Phantom Zone using this Kryptonian artifact, the Phantom Zone projector?" And they're basically going to put him in there for 10 years. And Batman acts as the quote executioner. And that's what they do to Superman. They send him to the Phantom Zone, and that's that. He goes away in 1989 for 10 more years. So, you know, that's that.
So he misses the majority of Batmania.
I wouldn't say he missed it, but sure. Yeah.
He's like, "Miss me with that shit."
Yeah. So, that's book three. There's one more chapter, to cover here. One more book, I should say. And we can do that for one more, for a different episode. I mean,
there's a lot. There is a lot in this issue, and this is a great issue.
And this issue, like, I love this issue up until like the last chapter. Like, this entire, and part of it, it's not because the last chapter of the last book is like bad. It makes perfect sense because John Byrne is doing exactly what the comic books did. And like, we'll cover that in the next episode where we talk about it, but you guys know what I mean. Insofar as, you know, a little bit of a spoiler beforehand, like, it has to do with like the tales of Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne when they were teens. There were absolutely stories done just like that in the Silver Age. And it was sort of done after Otto Binder had created Superboy for DC Comics. But they always played around with the idea that, you know, Bruce Wayne started doing his vigilantism thing well before he was Batman as a teenager, which, like, I can't stand as an idea. Like I said, it lines right up with those Silver Age stories. And considering the fact that it's a flashback story that they're talking about their teen years, it would be a Golden Age Silver Age tale.
That's true.
But oh man, like everything like leading up to that last, just sort of like fun. It's really the goofiest the whole thing gets. And you need to have Goofy if you're covering all these different eras. There is some great stuff in the next book alone, which is what makes me want this as like an imprint. You know, just like keywords to focus on for the next episode. Nightwing, Head of the Demon, League of Assassins.
Was their name Sorceress?
Oh, Sorceress. Oh my God. Yeah. That was such a throwback too. My holy shit. Like, that really was a deep dive in that. Yeah. Like I absolutely love Nightwing. I love the idea of Nightwing in book four. And I cannot wait to talk about that book and just how it like warms the cockles of where my heart should be.
We also get a young Batman that I don't think we've seen before.
I agree.
In a way.
Yeah. We've seen it, but not like that.
And I love the redesign original of Batman's suit later on in the tale. I think it's really cool. Like, I don't know why we haven't seen gray on black with white. Like, it makes the most sense.
I think only in the end of Kingdom Come have we seen something like that with the Red Cross symbol that he did. So, that's the closest.
I love that it's the traditional, like, the what we think of as like the traditional Batman symbol with the you know, the rounded wings and in the circle. But it's very big, like Frank Miller large on the chest. And the fact that the circle is white instead of yellow, like, dude, that's great. Like, I like that feels more in line with like, oh yeah, that's a bat like flying in front of the moon.
Yeah, it looks great. Like, I'm just looking at it now at the very last panel of the fourth book, which we will get to, but it does. It looks awesome. And I really like it because it's like a crossover of the classic Neil Adams with the original inception of the character.
Yep.
And it looks awesome.
It's clean. It's sleek and it falls. I mean, John Byrne in some of his designs in this just really like knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Batman. Woo, that's cool.
What's that?
The 80s Batman.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he really tapped into, like, once again, I do think it's impressive how he tapped into each era. the art style, the design style, particular artists and particular designs that were fads at those points in time. Just nothing short of impressive. And I love this book, and I need this to be a thing. I don't know who I need to write a letter to get this done, but it needs to fucking happen. But yeah, like we'll talk more about it. I'm super excited that we're like on the cusp of talking about the last chapter in part one. We will get to two and three at some other point. We're not going to go straight away into them. Two is another four parter and three is like 12 parts. We might have to just like all bullet point stuff for part three, because it'll take fucking 3 months to cover it in episodes. But I hope anybody that's listening, I hope our listeners have been able to like track this down and read it and follow along, because
it's on digital too. Like I believe you can get it in Kindle now.
Oh really?
Yeah. So I don't know if it's on the DC Universe. Was it DC Unlimited or whatever? I don't know if it's in that, but look for it.
Yeah, it's well worth it. It really is. Aside from that, we look forward to talking about the end game, for want of a better term, with part one here on our next go around, or as Snoop Dogg said on the Chronic 2001, just chill till the next episode.
Nice.
So I'm glad that you guys have really been enjoying it so far. That is very heartening for me, because
it's one of the best. I think that
I try. Well, read. I try not to pump things up, but I get so excited about this book. It's hard for me not to just be like, I love this. It's so fucking good. I'm you guys know me. I'm one of the types that's like, it's okay to say you like it. Maybe don't say it's the best, maybe let people make up their own mind. Like in this instance, like this is one of the few times I'm like, no, fuck you, it's the best. Like I love it. Like I love it so much. And I'm glad that you, in some manner or degree, at any rate, agree with my assessment so far.
I like it a lot. Yeah.
This is why we're friends and why we do a couple of podcasts together. I'm so happy that you've been digging it. I mean, Justin, you went out and bought the omnibus, so.
Oh yeah. Yep.
I mean, that right there, I think, is a glowing enough recommendation. Everyone, thanks for listening. We'll give our valedictions now. I'll start it off. Once again, I'm Powerful Brandon, and you can come check me out on social media, on Instagram at ThisBrandonHasPowers, on X/Twitter at Brandon's Powers. You can also check out our podcast page here on Instagram at Comics Paradox Podcast, as well as our website, www.comicsparadox.com. That's comicsparadox.com. Wherever you're listening to this, it's pretty much available wherever fine podcasts are broadcast. I've been making a big push for Good Pods. I'm really digging that app.
Yep.
It's really accessible. They try to make it easy for anybody coming in, to find podcasts, to figure out, what would be best for them to jump into. And we've been getting ranked pretty high on there. So that's definitely one for the win column. And aside from this, you can check me out, on another podcast with these two fellows, the Dork Knight, which I like to describe as the Bat Podcast, where we dissect and discuss all things Batman, because two of the three guys on it really love Batman, and the third guy is me. aside from that, you guys, Justin, let's tell everybody what you got going on, please.
Yeah, don't forget to check out Comics Paradox also on TeePublic if you're itching for
a shirt.
and some other great dorkening podcasts that you can check out too, some of which involve me. You can currently find me on one of the rotating hosts for Retro with Octopus Season 6, available wherever you find your fine podcasts. It's a show about all the things that made growing up great. You can also find me on my show, Epic Tales from the Sewers, which on Good Pods was rated number one for video game podcast today. I don't understand the rankings, but okay, thanks. You know, but check that out. Epic Tales from the Sewers, a TMNT podcast. And then one of the other podcasts I do is all about music. It's called the Generation Playlist, where we take a genre or artist and create a customized playlist for you. And it's basically about two guys who may not be as familiar with something learning to listen to and find out the best tracks that they like of that musician.
And Mr. Leo, what you got going on, sir?
Yeah, you know how to find me. Just Google me, but I do a bunch of stuff. Head on over to thedorkening.com. You can learn about all the shows there. And yeah, check out The Dork Night. A lot of fun. And yeah, that's about it for me.
Outstanding. All right. Yeah. So Leo Pond, Justin Cooper, Powerful Brandon, we all thank you for listening, and we will catch you on the flip flop. Bye.
Bye.